the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome back to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. Welcome to the summers of your youth, the golden age of global warming. My name is Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry live in studio. Pez, good afternoon, good morning, good evening and good night to you.
Great to see you in person, Higgos.
Fantastic.
As ever, wonderful eyes, wonderful body. And shall we say, and hello to all the listeners out there. Yep. We're back. Kicking off the season. Mm. Is it early? Possibly. But we want to be ahead of this first men's T20 against Sri Lanka. Try and set the scene a little bit for this very important creative project that we undertake.
Setting
the agenda of cricket around the world.
Yeah,
that's our mission statement. We should also acknowledge that Dave isn't here. Huge part of this group. He got married on Saturday.
Yeah, he's on honeymoon.
In Byron Bay. No doubt listening to this on repeat.
Yeah.
Dave, if you are listening to this, which I'm sure you're not, say Mark Warren's a donkey called Bully Boy on WhatsApp. check it out. It's the best content. Mark Warren's Twitter content's the best content, which I didn't think we'd say at the top of this show, but it's true.
Pez, you question what stage of the summer we're in, and club cricket's been played. It's like round four or five or three or one of them.
You know exactly what it is. It's three.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll fancy a game this afternoon. get down to training after this. People are right into the swing of things, but the cricket season seems a little bit late. Like the test season doesn't start until November. There's a T20 on Sunday against Sri Lanka, which the nation has been gripped for, because it's that in-between season where the footy finals are finished. It's a changeover season, Sam, and you know there's a bit of horse racing, I suppose. If that's your thing, I don't know whether the sports are on. I guess international sports, but yeah, cricket is like it's you're playing it, but it's not on TV just yet. Mm. So, how excited are you for three T20s against Sri Lanka?
Well, this is the thing. Like the cool thing to say would be like, oh yeah, whatever. You know, I'll tune in on Boxing Day. You know, that's when I tune in, but it's not true. I should be good. I mean, I suppose like it's. We were going to talk about what the fuck is this summer?
Mate, what is the summer? That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Because like with Australian cricket, I feel like it's been in like such short termism for like the last couple of years. Mm. I mean, stretching back to like even the tour to India in 2017, like there's always been a big test series on the horizon. Mm-hmm. And if there's not a big test series on the horizon, there's a big crisis on the horizon. Mm-hmm. With sandpaper.
Those are my favourite.
They beat England in the Ashes 4-0 in Australia, and then sandpaper happened. Mm. Everything changed. They started reckoning with 40 years of being assholes. Mm-hmm. That's the word they used. It wasn't. It's my word, but it's true. Mm-hmm. And so we were dealing with that. Then there was the small matter of the World Cup in the UK into the Ashes in the UK, where there was sort of 20 years to fix up, of failure there to fix up. They did that. And now it feels like for the first time in a while in Australian cricket, there's a little bit of breathing space. Mm. So we're going to see sort of, Kevin Roberts' leadership come to the fore. We're going to see, I guess we will see conversation about whether Smith will be, resume the captaincy once Tim Payne is done. Mm. I think we're going to see a lot of T20 focus, a lot of big bash focus. We've got the T20 World Cup here. And I guess we've got like Pakistan and New Zealand coming out. And I feel like, for the first time in a while, Australians can be looking forward to hopefully guys just scoring bulk hundreds forever. Can Australia rebuild its Death Star? Can we finally achieve the zenith of getting back to John Howard era politics and sport where we just lie back, watch guys hit hundreds, take fifers, win games easily and just feel safe amongst ourselves again? Mm. That's my primer for the summer.
Okay, so first of all, Matt Wade is first name of the team sheet is what you're saying, and we're hoping for five test matches on the MCG.
I would have thought so, yeah. Flat wickets, boring cricket, a lot of conversation about whether the game's dying at that level and whether T20 is going to be,
king. It's funny because like so much of what's great about Test cricket in Australia is it's on in that Christmas period. I'm thinking specifically of the Melbourne and the SCG Test matches when it's just on in the background and you're drifting out from the kitchen. You're having your second day turkey, all that kind of stuff, and it's just on. And I guarantee that like Steve Smith's just going to be batting throughout this entire fucking summer.
I think it's a fair guarantee.
You're just drifting out. It's just on. What's the score?
What's he on?
Are they on 1,000 yet? They hit 1,000. Is Warner out? Is Warner playing?
Yeah. What's he? 206. Oh, geez, he's good, isn't he?
Yeah. Better than
not
Bradman.
Not sure about that technique.
Yeah. Try bowling his pads.
Are you talking to yourself as you say this, like walking back into the kitchen?
Mate, I didn't actually know we ever broadcasted these conversations until just recently, which was quite alarming to me. But, that is the story of the summer, isn't it? I mean, because we'll try and create narration. I mean, this is now our job. So, we'll try and find some humour, and it'll be mostly in Pakistan collapses, which are inevitable. Mm. But, you know, like Pakistan coming out first, just to even skip past the T20s, which are coming up on the, you know, without Muhammad Amir bowling, you know, that left arm thing of like a threat, because Steve Smith kind of didn't look great against
Sam Curran.
Thank you, Sam Curran. Yeah, so maybe that was a thing. Nah, he's retired from Test cricket. Had a few years off there in the middle of his career as well. But yeah. There's not even that. You know, it's not a strong Pakistan team coming out. Australia, like, their bowling attack's rampant. Everyone scores runs in Australia. So what's the story? It's just like, can Steve Smith bat in a summer without getting out? That's the story that I just made.
Yeah, I think it is from a Test cricket point of view. And also, can I ask, like, you know, provocatively, is that what we want? I say yes. I think there's been enough controversy for the last couple of years. Yeah. Let me lie back, eat my second day turkey, have more beers than I need to have, put on a fair bit of weight that I don't need to put on, and just think about how good Smith is.
Yeah.
You know, on a serious note, you mentioned Muhammad Amir and stuff. I mean, it is funny, like, even in saying that we presume Australia's just going to score 1,000 runs, that's already a step back to us just presuming that we just destroy everyone. Like, Australia has been reasonably poor over the last couple of years. I'm like, oh, no, now that we've got Smith, we're just going to score 1,000 runs. But I think part of that is also, it was mentioned to me the other day, like, I think there is a question about needing to improve the standard of, like, Test wickets in Australia. Because I think that in the past, Australian Test wickets actually threw up a little bit of variety, historically speaking, before the drop-in era.
Yeah.
Apart from Adelaide, which probably could be a bit benign, the SCG turned. The MCG could seem a little bit wacker as the whacker.
Yeah.
But that at Perth actually, you know, held up their end of the bargain there. Yeah. Queensland always does a little bit. But now they're flat, they're dead, and if they're not, it's Perth and it's bouncy and in Australia's favour. But, like, they need to kind of – I hope that there's some spice in the wickets, because we are going to just watch a lot of, like, boring cricket. Test cricket in Australia can be boring unless there's spice.
Mate, I was just thinking about, like, that India-South Africa series where, like, India just bat, and it's just, like, every time a team goes over there, that's all they do. Like, the West Indies there a year ago, 2 years ago, and they just bat at 600 consistently, and it's grim. It's the same in Australia.
India win the toss and bat. It's like, oh, there'll be a declaration tomorrow around tea.
yeah. And then they just spin them out, and it's just, like, that's not fun to watch. But, like, cricket economies are based on, like, home test series wins. Mm. It's not good for business if your team loses at home, like Australia did last year, but it didn't really count because we didn't have our best players.
Yeah,
It didn't count. This summer counts for two. Mm. And, you know, obviously the Test Championship points will be important moving forward.
You're grinning at me as you say that.
We want to get into the playoffs or however it works. Yeah. What's the system?
Yeah.
McIntyre system? What's going on?
you're genuinely asking me now, aren't you? I don't know.
So it's Sri Lanka on Sunday, right? mate, I think, but, you know, I can see what's going to happen is that, like, the selection issues. It's like, which team are they going to pick to smash everyone? That's going to be one of the biggest things. And I think one of the best case scenarios is that we afford the wonderkind that we thought we were going to get last year. It's probably going to be Wilk Pekowski.
Mm.
And he's going to score runs and he's the future. And he's going to play 150 test matches.
So it should be. Like, you could put a cynical PR spin on it and go, okay, well, we need some narrative this summer. So, yeah, like, as they say on the Hello Sport podcast, like, we need a generational throbber.
Mm-hmm.
Probably do need a new one to come in. But you should do it during your home summer where the wickets are a little bit more familiar against opposition that aren't as, you know, proficient as, say, India were coming here last year without our two best players. What a great opportunity to get Pekowski in. But then again, you know, one of the other themes of this summer, he goes, is, and I don't know if maybe this is too idealistic, but, like, Greg Chappell has retired. He is off the scene of Australian cricket.
In the bin.
And Greg Chappell has been the lightning rod. He's been the pallbearer for picking young guys who, and we will talk to Dan Christian later, but who have basically had a good net.
Yeah.
Will we see a reinvestment?
Good net.
It's got to be good.
Good net. Good net.
Will we see a reinvestment in, like, domestic cricket? You know, will we see people getting – will we see reinvestment in grade cricket? You know, dare you say. Will we see a few older people on the scene, which would kind of count against Pekowski? You know, there's a great piece from Gideon Haig this morning saying that, like, if you actually go through the data of first-class cricket, of, like, the stats of Shield cricket.
Or data.
Or data. Or data, you know, as they call Sourav Ganguly, big data. It's really data. Weird seeing Sachin Tendulkar call him data on Twitter.
Big data.
Happy birthday, data. Yeah. Is your Twitter feed just Indian cricketers saying happy birthday to each other?
Mate, that's one of the best. Yeah, say work 10:50 the other day. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's that and memes. Yeah. Yeah, cat memes.
Easiest, yeah. I think we should start doing. Just say, let's just say happy birthday, hashtag Kohli, see what happens.
Yeah. Anyway. Let's try and get in that market.
Yeah, get in the market.
Yeah. Let's slice the pie. Anyway. Pez, when you were having a good net, what sort of things, like, I used to... like call out the amount of runs that I had like nicked. You know, for instance, because I spent my entire life and career, in, you know, if you can use the word career for a hobby that I paid to play.
You can't.
But I just did. Yeah, just to try and make people laugh or myself because I was bored most of the time and I was angry at myself for still playing into my late 20s. I'm still talking.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here actually. so I used to, yeah, I was famously a horrible netter, really bad at netting. Right. But so I would get through that with humor, with dark humor, by nicking off the first slip or the keeper and just being like, runs, save him.
Got
three.
It. Got it. Oh, I see. Yeah. I see.
Third man saved it. Oh, I came back for the run quick between the wickets.
You used humor as a coping mechanism.
And always have. Yeah.
And continue to do.
Except for this project.
Yeah. This is a serious project.
Yeah.
Are you saying what sort of netter was I? Well, have you been on my social lately?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know I have. Yeah. You know it's my screensaver. Yeah. It's in my favorites tab.
Well, most leg spinners will, a good netters, that's their thing. They're great net bowlers.
Yes, yeah.
Because there's nets there to protect you against the pain of watching the ball sail away. So every
it's
time
a safety net.
Somebody pulls you, and it invariably is a pull shot into the nets. Like, no, that was a sweeper there.
Sweep up.
Yeah. No, that was a flat six into the third. There's something about pulling the ball into the net where, like, you know, if you're the puller of the ball, you're like, that's gone for six. But there's something about the way it hits a net, whether it's a soft net or like a hard sort of metal net.
Yeah.
It's just hard to envisage it going for six, I think, like because the ball just plops back next to you. So, like, I didn't see it, so it didn't happen.
You know the thing where, like, you play, let's say, a cover drive and you didn't get it, like, you squirted a bit, but it rockets into the net and it's like the bowlers will call out shot. Like, were you ever honest to me, like, didn't get it, did not?
It was always in reverse, but that's why everyone just tries to hit the ball straight in the net so you can actually see how far it goes.
I was always trying to hit the guys warming back to their mark in the ankles.
Well, yeah.
I was not popular at my club. I played at seven different clubs.
Apparently bowlers, according to Jimmy Anderson, are going to have to bowl in helmets because of how quick the ball rockets back.
Yeah, true.
So anyway, they'll probably have to pick Pekowski. That will be a story. And I think the other, like, men's cricket story, I should say it like that, is... Yeah, we'll be the captaincy one with Steve Smith. And I think it's a genuine question. I do think it's a genuine question. And all I would say in relation to Smith and captaincy is what would we do if there was a legitimately viable alternative? Like if there was somebody else in the side who had all the kind of the rest of the criteria to be captain, was a batsman, let's just call that out, a batter with a high average who could hold their place in the side with a lot of leadership experience and was kind of had an opportunity to do it for sort of, 6-plus years, which is what we want them to be, then what would the conversation around Smith be? Because I think half of the Smith conversation is it's not really anyone else, is there?
Yeah. But, I like the hypothetical and I'll go with it, but it is a bit like what if my auntie was my uncle, you know, because, there isn't anyone else. Like Cummins would be the guy.
Well, I guess it's a way of kind of highlighting, like, the valid reasons for making Smith captain.
He's going to be captain though, right?
Okay.
He is. He is going to be captain. Am I right?
I think it seems like the path is being softened up for that.
Did you think that, like, during the Ashes that it was going to be worse, his comeback, and Warner's comeback and Ban? Like, they were all playing in the first test match that they were available to pick. They were all picked, and it was kind of like, oh, yeah, they're just playing cricket again. Because, like, in my mind, I think I had a bet going, actually, with like, one of my mates being like, oh, Warner will never play again. Because, like, when I like the – it's the council culture, which I subscribe to.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Council culture.
No, he made a mistake. Yeah. Therefore, he will never do the thing that he loves doing again. So that's what I thought was going to happen. But then, like, of course, as time passes by, it's just like, oh, yeah, he'll just play.
Yeah.
He'll just play. He's best player. He'll just play.
Yeah.
And so Smith will just be captain. He'll be captain and it'll be like, oh, yeah, it's normal.
It is funny. Like, you always just live life through the immediacy of everything now. Like, when Smith wasn't playing, it's like, oh, will he be able to make it back? And then, like, Cindy's calls 100, like, yeah, he's in the side. I can't remember what happened 5 days ago. Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, what was the result in Old Trafford again? Like,
Yeah. Folau was good in the World Cup, wasn't he?
Hello, Melbourne listeners. You know what I'm talking about. Trade radio. This is trade radio.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I just think Smith will be captain. I mean, so is this going to be Payne's last summer? He scored 100 the other day.
I don't know. I really like that he, like, so many people just wrote him off, like, nah, you know, look, I think it's time for him to go. It's like, the guy is like, it's a wonderful story for him. 10 years in the wilderness, recovering from a broken finger that's still broken, assumes a test captaincy in, like, strange circumstances, has done a wonderful job with it. That's not a CA line. That's just fact. Like, from how he's actually gilded that side together to where they are now and the manner in which he's done it. I mean, he's had both, like, both results and done it in the manner that we wanted while sort of still kind of staying one of the boys. He's been fantastic. Like, if you were him, why wouldn't you, like, soak up every single moment that you could, especially given that he's got the results? And, like, you know, it's the people who sort of say, we need more of a return from him with the bat. You know, you signal yourself as someone who doesn't understand cricket. The guy captains excellently. He's the best keeper in the country, if not the world. If he wants to go around another year and have a great summer, good luck to him. And the team will be better for it.
I'm personally a handsome guy to bat seven and wicket keep.
Sure.
Either him or Bancroft.
Okay.
That's what I want.
Right.
I think, like, Payne is like the cult hero that, like, that Bukowski will be. Like, because Smith's hard to get around a bit. He's just, you know, he's not that boys. You know what I mean? When I say that.
I think he's got a little darker level, Steve Smith. In a great way.
Yeah. He's funny.
Yeah. As we'll reveal on our possible Channel 7 show.
But who are the cult heroes in the Australian team? Because, like, the bowlers, like, Lyon, I suppose, is a bit of a cult hero. We need a cult batting hero because Warner's not the guy. Warner's not the guy. Travis Head isn't the guy. Wade.
He's not cult.
Bukowski, young blood. We like future. We like, because, like, the most important thing is the next thing that will happen. So the most important thing in this summer is the T20 World Cup next year.
What do you mean by cults? Do you mean, like, fringe cults, as in, you know, the great cricketer is a bit cult? By that I mean not serious, but a little bit thing on the side that people have a laugh at? Or do you mean cult as in, like, he's our hero, he's the next generation legend?
Because Smith is the
every Australian generation needs, like, the best since Bradman.
Yeah. So there's Ponting, and then there's your Damien Martin, who's an exceptional player, but, like, he's your real purist, or, like, he was cult.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
He actually might have been in one.
Yeah. That's right. Well, there are people in Australian cricket, past and present, who are and have been in cults, and we know that, and we can't say that on air. We can reveal, but it's a thing. Something to miss out on jobs.
Yeah, so I think that's the play. It's the marketing play. What's the story of the summer? I don't know. That's what I'm trying to get at.
He's in a cult.
Yeah, he's in a cult. Mate, that Victoria-South Australia game was good.
That was good.
That was good.
Yeah. You know, there's nothing better than, like, so the game, for those not familiar, was at the Junction Oval. Won the last Shield. South Australia usually been fairly sort of also-rans in Shield cricket. They occasionally make the odd final. And Victoria batted for, like, 2.5 days or whatever, hit, like, 650. And then South Australia batted fractionally slower.
Bit slower.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like, end of the third day or whatever. Yeah. Pete Hanscom, the captain, gave an interview that he probably regrets, just saying that he was a bit upset that that South Australia hadn't made a bit of a sporting declaration to make a match out of it.
Yeah.
And that's the best thing. Like, there's nothing better than, like, cricketers getting passive aggressive with each other, I think. Like, that's when the game comes into its own. That's when we get back to Howard era politics and sport.
Yeah.
You know, these are the narratives that we need anyway. He got, like, I feel sorry for Hanscom because he got, like, lambasted by everyone for, you know, not being correct. And I was like, look, give him the fractional break. He's just come off the field, no doubt. He should be better. You know, he's the leader. I'm sure he regrets it. But, like, talk about cancel culture. He probably had spent all day, as all cricketers do, hating every batsman. You guys are bad. You know, like, how cricketers make narratives on the field just to get themselves through it?
Yeah, yeah.
These guys are terrible. Like, when are you guys going to declare? You're going to make a fucking match of this? You know, blah, 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 blah. And you sort of convince yourself of something that's actually untrue. That's what they've done. He's come off the field and given an interview in that persona. And he probably needed someone to pull him aside before and said, you know, this is just a shit wicket, Pete.
Mate, cricket is consistently like Chinese drip torture.
Well, I've always said that.
You know, just on the head, just dripping away. You get a wicket and you go, here we go, one brings two. And I hope someone said that, you know, many times throughout the day. And you get the wicket and then the first, like, three balls, a new batsman just blocks it and you go, oh, no, it's the same wicket we're playing on and the ball's 150 million years old.
Yeah.
So we're not getting any wickets. But, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's good. I like the wickets in Australia. They're fun. It's just funny, Pez, because we're always looking for new angles to take, you know, cricket. But there's so many truisms consistently. I think even the Women's Ashes last year when Australia just needs to get a draw to win to retain the Ashes. Yeah. But they didn't make a game of it. It's better to draw and annoy the opposition than to get an outright victory.
Yeah, it depends what you mean by making a game of it. Yeah. I mean, like, they didn't make a statistical game of it, but they made a psychological game of it. You know? What does it really mean?
Yeah.
Like, upset, annoying opposition,
yeah,
even if it's a cost of a statistical win,
yeah,
is the bigger win.
Yeah. I prefer to miss out on finals.
the feeling of upsetting someone in the opposition, genuine, through cricket, in a slow drip torture, passive-aggressive way, nothing better.
Yeah, nothing better.
Nothing better.
Pez, I'm trying to think what else happens in cricket recently. Shane Watson's Twitter got hacked.
I'm looking at two things in our notes here. One is new high performance manager Drew Gin says Australia's we need to train like rowers, not cricketers, and also Watson got hacked. Let's go with Watson.
Okay, or Tremlett.
Yeah, that's right.
He's got too big.
Yeah. Well, you were making a few comments about his body, actually, off air. You were saying he's got the shape's not right.
Well, he hasn't any ambition for shape or Tony. He's just trying to get as big as possible. I'll say fair play to him. Mm. Simon Jones, MBE, commented on his Twitter saying, I can't call you Twiggy anymore or something. And it's just, you know, it's just he's putting it out there. I guess if you have to comment on the male form.
Twiggy,
consistently.
Well, he's tall. Let's call him Tiny.
What, do you roll offies?
Yeah. Classic. Watson got hacked. I guess that was pretty funny. I mean, once again, for probably the fourth or fifth time, Shane, if you are listening, which you're not, you're very welcome to come onto this show. Mm. There won't be any Watson review jokes other than to actually sledge people who do make them.
Yeah.
We love
plays Glade Cricket and Grade Cricket as well as Glade Cricket and has not been on the show.
It still was incredibly and mightily incongruous to see his bio change to join Shadow Realm, link in bio for free nudes. Wouldn't mind if he wanted nudes, to be honest.
It wasn't then that I thought he'd been hacked, to be honest. Yeah, that wasn't the moment for me.
Yeah.
It's 2 days later.
Mm. What else have we got? I mean, Mitch Marsh got out and punched a wall.
Aren't the Marshes good?
Yeah.
This is it's the Marsh Cup, obviously, but it's this time of year. It's this time of year where the Marshes, Sean Marsh got 200 yesterday. Yeah. That's good. Get him in the team. He's captain.
It. Yeah.
He can be captain.
About time.
Yeah, give him a go. Runs. Mm. Yeah, looks good. He's a good net away from being the Australian captain.
Sean Marsh had his good net when he was 14, and it's been fantastic since. It was funny, actually. Like, it's his highest first-class score.
Yep.
Nobody disagrees that Sean Marsh isn't just an imperious and wonderful batsman to watch when he's in form. Yep. But I saw, and I should probably get the name right, but I think it was Jamie Cox tweeted after, Marsh has hit his highest first-class scores, surprised to see that Sean Marsh only has 27 first-class centuries after 20 years in first-class cricket. I was like, that's backhander if I've ever saw him. So I'm like, 27, that's really good. Oh, after 20 seasons, right, I thought he'd have more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice. I was actually surprised that Steve Waugh only played 156 tests, given he was around for so long.
Yeah,
that's right. I was surprised by that. I thought they would have played more tests than that.
He might have reminded you via Instagram, which is now just homage to all of his statistics through first person. I love Steve Waugh. He delivers.
It was 20 years ago that I also scored 100 in each innings in an Ashes test. Wouldn't he be good for a live guest? Anyway, anything else happening in cricket?
Oh, I'm sure. Look, I should say, the WBBL is on, and yeah, I would encourage people to watch highlights of Phoebe Litchfield's
16, isn't she?
She's 16 years old.
Yeah.
50-odd not out to steer home the Thunder yesterday at North Sydney Oval. There's some good footage of her in the nets as well, like smoking them, genuinely timing them well. In fact, this came out a few months ago. I posted saying something like, timing's immaculate, and someone just wrote under it, you're a nonce. But she's, talk about probably a generational talent. She's a good bat.
Yeah.
just wanted to make that point.
Yeah. Elise Perry just dominating. I mean, the Sixers, like with Elise Perry and Elisa Healy at the top, is just they'll just win. The
Australian women's team win every just game. Destroy everybody. This is Australian sport, right? You can say, a lot of people have varying views about the prominence of women's cricket or whatever. Mm. People say oh, it's just fourth grade. I was like, well, two things about that. Firstly, it's not. Secondly, I like watching fourth grade. Mm. I digress. As soon as any of our national teams, which we yearn to be amazing and just destroy everyone, as soon as they get to that level, okay, great, what's next? Who else can I sledge? Because the Australian women's team are just destroying people, have been for 18 months. Good.
Yeah.
What's up? What's up the men's team? What's up the Wallabies? Checker's got to go. How do we line things up to get to Howard era politics? Late 90s investment in the Olympics, winning everything.
Mm.
Take us back there, Kevvy Roberts.
Buy back the guns.
Yeah. That's what you can expect this season on the Great Cricketer podcast.
Yeah. All right, who's got about four on Sunday, mate?
I don't know.
Should we get Dan Christian on the show? Yep. Let's get Dan Christian on the show, and after that, hashtag AskTGC.
Apparently they call in the snorkel. Marcus North, hello.
G'day, boys. How are you? The snorkel, I like it. Straight in there.
I'm sure you do.
Obviously, I work in English cricket now with Durham as director of cricket there. And the
guy, you can't say much.
Can't say too much,
reasons,
but I did get some pleasure this afternoon. So we had some optional training. Mark Wood's injured at the moment, but he was in seeing the physio. And I knew he was in the change room, so I kind of ran in, overly excited, and he saw me straight away. And he just looked at me and went, fuck off, Northy. I don't want to talk to you. So, yeah.
Well, it's our first interview for the year. Here goes. And it's a guy that we've wanted to have on the show for a very long time. He's represented his country 35 times in short form cricket, best of 5 for 31 in ODI, striking at around 100. He's played 83 first class matches with nearly 4,000 runs, 163 wickets, high score of 131 not out, best bowling of 5 for 24. It's a T20, where he's made a major mark as a global gun for hire, playing for University of New South Wales, New South Wales, South Australia, Hampshire, Deccan Chargers, Brisbane Heat, Royal Challengers, Bangalore, Victoria, Gloucestershire, Middlesex, Hobart, Hurricanes, Nottinghamshire, Rising Pune, Super Giants, Delhi Daredevils, Jersey Stars, Melbourne Renegades, Trinbago Knight Riders, Moulton Sultans, and Australia. He wins everywhere he goes. He's played in 12 finals, winning 7 titles. A warm welcome, he goes, to Dan Christian. G'day, Dan.
Thanks for having me, boys. I think you missed a couple of teams there, but that's okay.
Oh, what did we miss?
Yeah, club teams.
Yeah.
Well, you threw in University of New South Wales Cricket Club, so I suppose you better throw in my other club teams. I played for Brisbane South when I was at the Brisbane Heat. I played for Newtown when I was down at the Hurricanes, and I now play for Richmond or the Monash Tigers, and also Adelaide Uni when I was over at South Australia.
Oh my God. So you've played for every grade club too, in every state. Yeah. Mate, we always start there, you know. I mean, you've played at nearly every club, but you know, like, you came through the rough and tumble world of like Sydney grade cricket in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Sydney Test cricket.
A notoriously tough arena. Can you just tell us a few of your memories from playing there?
Yeah, very, very tough. It's my lower grade, my first couple of years. I think I played half a year of third grade, then half a year of fourth grade when I was 15. And then second grade the next year when I was 16, we lost the final to Mossman up at Allan Border Oval up there. And that was a wonderful fixture. Back then, there seemed to be so many more older blokes coming sort of back down the grades. Mm. Doesn't seem to happen anymore. So I got a real good grounding, particularly at Uni New South Wales, and then into first grade sort of late that year, and then for the rest, it wouldn't happen. You just can't get away with it anymore. But the amount of sort of sledging and abuse that used to go on back then was extraordinary. As a young kid, you just sort of had to put up with it. That's how it was. You know, you were a young upstart and you used to get abused by the bloke at slip. You used to get abused by the bowler. And it was either fight or flight, or whatever the expression is.
Sounds like you look back on that with a little bit of affection, mate.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Fond memories. Yeah. Fond memories.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. it was a great grounding. So, you learn pretty quick that you've got to get involved in the tussle. And then, otherwise, you're off doing something else.
So it sounds like you had to wait till you were, 16, 17, 18 maybe to crack first grade. Obviously a long apprenticeship in the lower grades, three, four games by the sounds of it. I mean, like, when did you first realise that you were, you know, really good enough that you might be able to turn this into, like, a job?
Well, it's kind of hard at New South Wales. Well, I only played, when I first played for New South Wales, I think when I was 21, 22.
Right.
And I started first grade when I was 17. So these days, that's an extremely long apprenticeship, 4 years. most guys get picked there straight in the state team when they've had half a dozen first grade games and a good net in front of the selectors. So
and a good net, don't forget the good net.
Good net.
Yeah. So, breaking into that New South Wales team back then was pretty difficult because it was tough back then. So I went 1 year of 2020s, and then the next year I played one day as and 2020s, but I was nowhere near the Shield team. And got an opportunity to go to South Australia when I was 23. So, it was I don't know, a different kind of pathway, I suppose, to what guys get these days. So you never really playing grade cricket, you never really thought you were that close because there was, you know, so many other guys doing well in Sydney grade.
Mate, like, just on that, we'll come to your 2020 stuff in a second, but just curious about what players might think around, you know, the whether there might be a bit of a new era of reinvestment in grade cricket or, like, domestic cricket generally now that Greg Chappell's left the helm. You know, maybe it's too much of a bastardisation to say this, but, you know, he seemed to be the guy that was super keen on picking guys who'd had a good net in front of the selectors when they were sort of 18 or 19 and maybe foregoing a few of those older blokes that had been hanging around grade cricket, had done the apprenticeship, that had averaged sort of 40 or 50. You know, like, are you expecting maybe a little bit more, I guess, investment and regard for people's results at, like, a grade or, you know, say state level?
Yeah, I don't know. That's certainly the perception around Greg Chappell's tenure, I suppose. The guys that are, 26, 27 and been killing grade cricket for 5, 6, 7 years, they're done. They don't really get an opportunity at state level. So, it'd be nice if those guys still were able to push their way in. I don't think most guys don't play their best cricket until their early 30s when you've actually, you know, spent some time learning your game and not only your game, you just don't tend to make the stupid mistakes that you do when you're 21. I think this, you can still be picking guys. Guys should still be getting picked for their state team when they're late 20s and their 30s because that's when they're going to play their best cricket. Mm. Yeah, you might not get as much time in the Australian team. I understand wanting to pick kids early in Shield cricket so then they've got time to learn in Shield cricket and then you know, be good playing for Australia. But, you still want to have a lot of senior guys around your state and your club teams because they're the ones that the really good kids coming through are going to learn off.
Mate, just on to T20 stuff, like, and we sort of said this earlier on the show today, but now that the Ashes has been, you know, run and, well, not won, but drawn, and we've moved through a couple of big sort of test series in the World Cup, it feels to me like there's probably going to be an increased focus on T20 cricket in Australia for the next little while as we lead up to the, you know, the World T20 tournament here next year. You know, you're a guy that's now known as an exceptionally successful T20 specialist in Australia. You've played, 12 finals as of a couple of months ago. You've won 7 titles. Renegades in Victoria coach Andrew McDonald said everywhere he goes, he wins. So just for the benefit of the listeners, like how do you win in T20 cricket?
Old blokes. You've got to have a team full of old blokes. That's old blokes. You've got to have old blokes because you just don't, I suppose, as an old bloke, you don't succumb to the pressures of a match as much as what you might see a kid do. Yeah, kids can do some great stuff, but in the most successful teams I've been in, you have they're full of experienced players that you know, get the job done when the pressure's on, when those crucial moments in a final when the crowd's going nuts and the scoreboard's probably saying that you're not in a great position. They tend to get the job done. So we had it last year, particularly with our Renegades team last year, and someone like Harry Gurney, who's he's just won again over in the CPL. He got the job done for us there. I think it's as simple as that. You've just got to have guys that are the most calm under pressure, which tends to be the old bloke.
Dan, you've obviously had a distinguished short form career, especially, and I wouldn't be surprised if you would be pretty keen to have played the all rounder role in the World Cup just gone. But I mean, obviously the T20 World Cup in Australia in 12 months' time or so, you must surely have one eye on at least being in the squad for that. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, I'd love to be a part of that. That'd be fantastic. A little bit of a last hurrah, if you like. It's probably my last chance to play in a tournament like that. Given I'll be next year, I'll be 37 when that's going on. So, I'd love to be a part of it. I feel like I'm playing pretty good cricket. Probably playing the best cricket of my career. My body's still really good. Like I said before, the mind and being an older bloke, you're just a bit calmer in situations that I might have been when I was 27 or 28 when I first played for Australia. So, yeah, I'd love to get another chance.
Australia are fifth in the world, I think I'm right in saying, in T20s. Why have we struggled so much in this shorter form, the shortest form of the game in particular? Is it because they're not picking guys who are, you know, I don't want to typecast you, but, you know, specialise like yourself in T20 cricket, or have they just sort of stuck to the, you know, the one-day players? I mean, what is it? Why are Australia so bad or fifth in the world?
Why are we not the best?
Why aren't we the best at everything? Hmm. Why did the Wallabies lose?
I can't help you with the Wallabies. I haven't watched enough of it. But I think the T20 team in the past, I think, has been... there's probably been a lot of guys playing that format. Yes, they're wonderful cricketers. They're absolutely fantastic cricketers, but they don't play much 2020 cricket.
Yeah.
Whereas now we've got a lot of guys around the country that have played a lot of 2020 cricket, that are playing the franchise stuff around the world, and they know, they just sort of tend to know the game a bit better. So I think in the past we might have fallen into a trap of just sort of picking the best. It looks like we've picked, you know, the best six or seven batsmen and just almost pulled them out of a hat as to who's going to bat where, rather than picking guys that specialise in batting at the deaths, specialise in batting in the middle and specialise at open. So, hopefully we're going closer down that path of, like you say, picking those specialists. And I think we can certainly be very competitive in that World Cup if they pick a team like that. Mm.
Like, as we go to air, Dan, like, overnight you were just drafted for the Manchester Originals in the 100, which is like a sort of semi-new format, I guess. Like, we've got a lot of UK listeners, but Aussie listeners as well. I mean, like, that'll probably be your 35th team that you've been part of. I mean, like, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean to be drafted for the Originals?
Yeah.
I'm really happy. I'm really excited to be a part of it. It was a wonderful time to be over in England this year, as you guys well know, around the Ashes and the World Cup. There was a real buzz about the game, and now with the 100 as well, I think that'll continue on next year. It's being a brand new format and brand new teams, sort of franchising all these teams, but playing out of the big grounds over there. I think it'll go really, really well, and having all the big names being available and getting picked too, you know, your Rashid Khans and Andre Russell and these kind of blokes being involved in it. I think it'll go well. So I'm thrilled to be a part of it. It'll be a great experience. It'll be good fun.
Is it one of those things, Dan, where like people, like the players are really excited to be part of it because no one really knows how it's going to go? Because there's been heaps of criticism about it. Like, we don't need another format. It's weird, 100 balls. Like, it's just, it's foreign, and therefore we're all scared of change. So, you know, we have to sledge it. But like, is it one of the things where the players, especially with the availability of the players, as you've just said, the names are going to be pretty impressive. Like, the teams that they're putting out are going to be pretty sensational. I mean, so from the player's perspective, are you guys super looking forward to it, but also because, like, no one really knows what's going to happen?
Yeah, a bit of both. And you talk about sort of fans and just people not wanting change. England cricket fans are probably the absolute worst at that. They don't like the change in anything. So that's going to be the biggest... The traditional fans, anyway. They're going to be the biggest attractors of it, but I think it'll be huge, and everyone's excited about it. Everyone's talking about it, but the change in format—it's only 20 balls, so it's not going to be too much. It might be a bit of, a bit of talk about, you know, these 10 ball overs and whatever. I haven't even read the rules, to be honest, but it's just going to be bowling and batting. That's all it is. Bowling and batting, trying to hit sixes and trying to bowl perfect Yorkers. Like, there's not going to be much more to it.
It's still a game of cricket. It's still cricket, isn't it?
And people are going to come and watch it.
Yeah.
I think we asked you this in London a few months ago, but I think it's still relevant on the same point that Higgins was sort of making. Like, when he was speaking to the BBC in 2018, Shane Warne said, I'm not a fan of the 100. I think we've got three formats that work really well and you don't need to confuse spectators with any more. And then a few months ago, he was announced as the coach of North London and he said, I love the concept of the 100. Grabbed my attention the way the IPL did. Always want to be ahead of the curve because cricket benefits from innovation. What do you make of the 100? You don't have to answer that. I just wanted to read that again.
At first, I was not interested in it. I just thought it sounded ridiculous at first. But the more you think about it, it's just cricket, and people are going to come and watch it, and it's going to be great fun. It's going to be short, sharp, and if people are talking about it, then it's going to generate interest in the game, and generating interest in the game is going to get more and more kids playing, and more families getting involved, and it's great. There's going to be a women's comp going along on side of it as well. So it's just, I think it's just fantastic for the game. I think it'll go really well. That was a politically correct answer, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, actually. Well, I guess, you know, now that we're talking about that, and I'm kind of still here, goes thunder here a little bit, so we can maybe like run off the back of it. But there was, speaking of politically correct, there was a photo going around that you were involved in last week, ahead of the PM's 11 match. It was you and your colleague Peter Siddle, and you, someone had underarmed a ball with like very, very catchable height and no pace on it to the current Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. And the technique that he was employing before catching the ball raised a few eyebrows around the country. So just as the person who perhaps lobbed it or was watching, you know, what was your impressions of what happened? Can you just take us into the room?
Well, he crocodiled it. We're standing there, Sid's and I are standing outside the door of his office, of the PM's office, and the media, there's a big, a group of media guys standing there waiting for him to come out as well. And then Sid goes, "Oh, should we lob the ball in?" I said, "I'm not doing it, you do it." And he said, "Well, I'll throw it at him or I'll just lob it." I said, "Oh, just lob it. You can't throw it at him. He said, what breaks his finger or something?" And so the media were keen as mustard for him to drop it. They really wanted him to drop it. But he actually, despite not looking technically correct, he caught it and walked straight over and actually made it look. He actually made it look pretty smooth.
He did
all right.
I guess that's his job. Did you see any fear in his eyes though as the ball was coming at him? I mean, you know, there's a lot of.
Is there a murmur or like a squeal or something? Or?
Yeah.
No, there's no squeal. I was a little bit surprised when he saw the cricket ball up in the air. Then he calmed down and he caught it. And yeah, we went into the chat. Well, him and Sid went into the chat. I just stood there like a might as well not have even been there. Wanted to talk about the Ashes to Sid, so which is fair enough. But no, it was good. It's good fun. Game will be good fun on Thursday night. It'll be nice to be a part of.
I mean, what were you hoping was the outcome of the catch? Just to keep laboring this point.
Yeah, we'll keep one. Yeah, what there? Yeah.
Do you want me to catch it or spill it?
Do you want
me
to drop it?
I wouldn't mind him spilling.
I hadn't really thought that far ahead. The
You've been selected in his side, I suppose. He's named you captain of his side.
Probably, if he had dropped it.
Yeah.
The media guys were looking for a John Howard bowling type situation where, you know, obviously he missed the wicket wherever he bowled that ball years ago. Yeah, I suppose they wanted him to drop it and. They could use the grab to make fun of him for the next 20 years, I suppose.
Because you spent like your whole life.
No, he did it well.
You spent your whole life in cricket, Dan. Obviously, as many of us have, even listened to this show. And like when you saw the crocodile come out, did you just think yuck straight away? Like you know, like when you throw, you know, a tennis ball to one of your mates or a keys or something, it doesn't look neat. You just think immediately, I'm a better person than them because I'm a better cricketer than them. Yes.
It certainly looked. It certainly looked unnatural. He didn't make it look natural. Put it that way. Didn't look like he caught many cricket balls in the past. I know. He loves his league. He loves it. He loves the Sharks.
Yeah.
And I've seen him sort of kicking a footy around. But the footy certainly looked a bit more natural in his hands than the cricket ball.
I guess semi-related, mate. I didn't want to speak to you without passing up asking you about the work you do with Indigenous cricket. As a proud Wiradjuri man, I mean, can you just tell us a little bit about the relationship between cricket and Indigenous Australia, you know, the outlook and what you've been doing to be part of it?
So I've done a bit over the last few years. I've done a bit with with Cricket Australia and the Australian Aboriginal team or Indigenous team. We went over to England and sort of retraced the steps of the guys in 1868. And if you don't know that story, we'll look it up. It's a pretty amazing story. There were a team of guys from Western Victoria they walked all the way to Melbourne and smuggled into the bottom of a boat and then taken over to England for 3 months on the boat and then played, I think they played about 40-odd games, I think, over there over 3 or 4 months. And, that was the first sporting team to leave Australian shores in 1868. So, we recreated that last year, and that was fantastic to be a part of that. It was a real honour to be a part of that team. And, we didn't get to play at Lords, unfortunately, but we went to Lords, and the Aussie team were there getting ready for a one-day match. And we did a few cultural things around the country, and the tour itself was was really good. We played some great cricket. And yeah, it was a real shot in the arm for Indigenous cricket, to give some kids, some young kids, I suppose, the some role models to look up to and try and make cricket a viable career option down the track. Obviously, we see the footy codes, the NRL and the AFL, they're littered with Aboriginal or Indigenous players that really dominate the game, but we don't see it in cricket. So if we can get some of those kids, somehow attract some of those kids into our game, I think that'd be fantastic. So this year we're not having an actual Indigenous round like we do in the other sports, but there's going to be a sort of week celebration. So I know a few teams are getting around it. I know the Melbourne Renegades are getting around it. We'll have a themed match, which will be fantastic. And yeah, it's a great opportunity, I think, for us to promote our sport to the wider Aboriginal community, and then conversely to promote our culture and our heritage to the wider cricket community as well.
Nice one, Dan. All right, well, we'll let you go, mate. Thanks for joining us today, and all the best, especially with the national aspirations heading into the World Cup next year. You should probably be there, to be fair.
Oh, thanks. Cheers. No worries. No, thanks for having me. Always a good time, boys.
He's one of Yorkshire's favourite sons. Wikipedia says his name is Brez Big Time or Brezzy Lad. It's Tim Bresnan. Welcome to the Great Cricketer.
We need therapy, Brez. We need a team of doctors to work with us, each of us, each individual, and because we've had psychological trauma inflicted upon us. I mean, is this, if you were us, how would you be feeling?
I think what I'd do is, as a matter of urgency, I'd set up a care centre. I'd call it the Joel Wilson Institute.
Well, here goes, some things change, like us all actually being in the same studio together and having some decent sound production. Some things stay the same. We're still friends with our, you know, compadres at Budgie Smuggler. This summer we are going to be talking about them, and probably not making it up as we go as much. But, you know, we'll see where it flies off. First thing we want to say is, for those who did buy our custom budgies through the winter, the Aussie winter, which was the all-time alpha range, thank you. They sold out in minutes.
Yep.
Clearly there's a preoccupation and fascination with rigs in this country and in the UK.
And in Leeds, apparently.
Yeah.
Where
they
were sold.
That's right. Yeah. Someone actually, after one of the live shows, gave me a pair of smuggles and said, oh, my mate's in the toilet. This is for his what they call him, stag do. Can you write something on the inside?
Yes, that's right. I was very confused because I didn't know what was happening. I walked out and I saw you signing smugglers, and I thought, well, that's not a usual thing to see.
Yeah. And he's like, can you write something funny in front of like five blokes? It was just after the show. And I wrote, like, it's something that wasn't that funny. It was just something like, oh, I have a small to medium-sized penis.
Now that I think about it, I actually didn't ask you what you were doing. I just saw you doing that, and I just thought, that's weird.
Well, I wrote it, and then I gave it back
to him. But I didn't ask any questions.
I'm a bit disappointed.
What's Piz up to?
Yeah. So just do a gag right now, mate, in front of my mates. Anyway, I thank them for coming to the show and buying those smugglers. But we're going to do another range of smugglers in conjunction with Budgie Smuggler. They're going to be called – it's not about all-time alphas. It's actually going to broaden it a little bit. It's just going to be Great Australian Rigs. Mm-hmm. It's going to be part of Budgie Smuggler's Ordinary Rig campaign, which is about a celebration of rigs of all shapes and sizes. Mm. We're calling ours Great Australian Rigs. So what we want you to do, we're going to do it with your help out there. We want you to submit your favourite rigs, your favourite Australian cricket rigs. The criteria is as follows. They have to have played for Australia. So we want them at like sort of peak rig level. So we're not saying that it has to be an amazing rig. Actually, it's shaped, the rigs of all shapes and sizes.
Greatest is subjective. It's a subjective. Exactly. It's greatest to you.
It's about celebrating all rigs, right? Yeah. It could be, you know, Inzamam's rig, Where Australian. You know,
yeah.
A rig like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Could be Chris Tremlett.
Yeah.
You know, it could be the leanness of Nathan Lyon.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Stoinis, whatever floats your boat. It could be Stoinis. Mm. But we want you to post to us. We want you to tag in at Budgie Smuggler, at Grad Cricketer, and just tell us your best rig. And then we're just going to be announcing the top order and the middle order and whatever as the weeks go on. So we want to find out from you who are your favourite, your great Australian rigs, and then we're going to release some customs budgies around that, which is normal thing to do with your
normal
life.
Normal stuff, mate.
Also encouraging you, of course, if you want custom budgies for your own club cricket side, if you go to the Budgie Smuggler website, you put in the little details there, Budgie Smuggler's going to waive the setup fee, the processing fee, if you let them know that the Great Cricketer sent you. I presume there's some kind of box there where you can do that. Yeah. So please do that. And we're going to obviously be discussing what that top order and middle order and bowlers are down the track.
Pez, it's exam time for students out there. We got heaps of young listeners who will be doing their U12 final school exams in the coming weeks. I say, what better way to procrastinate when you should be studying and jump online, create some custom budgies. That's what you should be doing.
Yeah.
That's what I do. Do you ever are you ever on Facebook on like your desktop and then like type in Facebook, for instance, into the search engine when you're already on that website? That's my level of social media addiction now. I do the same thing where I close like Instagram and then I open up my Instagram immediately because my brain is like stopped working.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's concerning. Mm. Like the one for me is like lazily typing in, say, like the T and the W of Twitter and then just like arrogantly expecting
it's muscle memory.
The internet to get it's the rest memory. Of it. I don't want to write in the entire word.
No.
TW, get me there.
No.
I'm off.
Mate, I don't like going to an ATM where there's someone already using the ATM. I can't wait 14 seconds for them to process to receive their receipt.
Yeah.
Why would you need a receipt out of an ATM?
Yeah, super concerning. Test cricket will survive, though.
Yeah. So that's budgiesmuggler.com.
That's budgiesmuggler.com.au. Custom smugglers. Your great Australian rigs. Let us know.
Mate, Pez, I'll just take this moment. I should say at the top of the show, but like, we'll obviously be speaking about Budgie Smuggler throughout the whole summer. But this show wouldn't exist without them. And I was thinking, we're recording this on a Monday. Driving here into the studio today, people like going on to work Monday morning just in greys and blacks and whites. And I thought, fuck that. I don't want to ever do that. You know, my parents would love me to be using, you know, the degree that I studied for. Mm. But not me. Jokes on the internet. That's where the money is. And that wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for Budgie Smuggler. So we'll say thanks to them. Anyway, budgiesmuggler.com. I know you. All right, Pez, hashtag ask TGC. We should use this moment in time to speak about all the things that we've been doing. We're taking about a month off, which is funny because like it was such a big winter cricketing wise that there wasn't no real break. We obviously toured as well. That was exciting for us. And we've been doing a whole bunch of stuff, planning basically for the summer. And all of those things are about to come into fruition in the coming weeks, I suppose. First things first, I suppose we need to say that there is a Brisbane live show on sale right now. It's the Princess Theatre. That is going to be on Thursday, the night of the first day of the first test match against Pakistan, Princess Theatre.
21 November,
thank you very much, mate. That is the first show. There are tickets on sale for Sydney and Melbourne. There are four shows there, two in each city. In Melbourne, the 27th and the 28th of December, the Corner Hotel. We will be there. And then the Comedy Store on the 3rd and 4th of January. Is that
correct.
Right?
Correct.
Correct. And we are 9/10 of the way into doing one more show at another test venue that isn't as far away as Perth.
But we can't quite announce it yet. But we have a wonderful couple of guests, actually. So we're going to tease out the Sydney one down the track. But so far in Brisbane, we are going to be linking with the great Jason Dizzy Gillespie.
He's going to be there.
The Princess Theatre.
Yeah.
He was exceptional when he joined us in London, and we're looking forward to doing that with him on home turf. Dizzy's fantastic. I mean, you can just imagine where that will go. He's very good at talking about other people. He's also very good at talking about himself in a like wonderfully self-aware way. So
now that I think about it, when we had him for the London live show, he was right in contention for the England coaching job, and he couldn't say a lot. I mean, he said a lot.
Yeah, he did.
And now I think about it, that is the reason why he didn't get it. He said some.
There were a couple of good ones.
But now the England coach has been announced, and it's not Jason Gillespie, so, you know, it's going to be open slather. I don't want to speak on behalf of Jason, but I just have, and it's going to be the wildest night of your life. No,
we should say, like, it really is a – we thought about recording these, and people familiar with the show know that we talk about this, but we did originally think about recording these last year when we first did it, and then after 5 minutes realised that none of them were publishable. So if you do want the more sort of into X-rated grade cricketer material, you know, I'm not saying it's a sportsman's lunch. It's probably darker than that, to be honest.
Far darker, yeah.
If you've got questions you need to ask in person, if you are a narcissist and you need to get up and speak and do your own joke that's usually better than what we do, then come and out for us. There's all sorts of opportunities there.
Yeah.
So that's Jason Gillespie. We can't tell you who our guest is in LA, but he is locked in. And we'll announce that show all at the same time.
That show isn't in the city that isn't Perth.
No, it's the one that isn't Perth.
Yeah.
You didn't hear what I said. And and then for Melbourne, very happy to announce that we are linking. We've never linked with this guy before, but he's a Sydney grade cricket doyen who has represented in all three forms of the game. He has a, I guess, a like a fledgling media career, great media talent. John the Duke Hastings, who's relocated from Sydney down to Melbourne. He will be joining us on the 27th and 28th at the Corner Hotel. Very, very keen to do it and an extremely funny guy with a bunch of stories. And I think you're going to be seeing the Duke, as they call him, across your TV screens and radio stations in the next like 5 to 10 years because he's on the way up. Great storyteller.
All these tickets are available at greycricketer.club, which is the name of our website that you can buy tickets at. So if you came last summer or if you came during the winter, it is an entirely new act. That's another thing we should do. We should get working on. It's an entirely new act. So it's a new show, new guests, different guests, and the guests are always fantastic and they always say way more things than what you would think because it's a really fun, wild night out. So please do come along because we love seeing you guys in person. And they're one of the funnest things we get to do as part of this wild adventure that is the great cricketer. Sam, Dave and I are on stage with international cricketers. What else is going on, mate? I mean, there's also, you know, there's merchandise you can buy at greatcricketer.club. Yep. You've got the stubby holders there, 4-pack for $17.50.
Mm-hmm.
One person on Facebook commented, bit steep for stubby holders.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know what to reply to that, so he's blocked from the account.
Mm-hmm. Never criticise us.
Never criticise us. Yeah, never. That's the thing you can do. What else are we doing? We're in the process of obviously other projects which have not been contractually signed to yet.
Mm.
And then the podcast returns as of today. So it's
every week. Many who follow the account will have seen that we've been doing some interviews with a bunch of Aussie players through Channel 7.
Yeah.
Looking forward to telling you guys more in the next couple of weeks about what it is that we're doing with them this year. But it's very exciting. It's probably deeper engagement than last year. And, they're like a great bunch of people there, to be honest. They've got a great cricket team. So not a great cricket team.
No.
Well, that would be weird. But, we're looking forward to telling you what we're doing with them throughout the summer as well.
That reminds me actually just in the live show aspect, I'll tease this one a little bit, in that, those who came to the World Cup and the Ashes, the World Tour that we did for Sydney and Melbourne and overseas as well, we basically posed a question of like, is Smith better than Bradman? We were fortunate enough to interview Steve Smith for Channel 7 and we posed that question to him by showing him footage of the best bowler that that ever got Bradman out 10 times, Clara Grimmett, and we'll show you the answer on stage. And it's good.
Yeah.
It's good. Mm. That might be it.
I think we've subjected our listeners.
Yeah, sorry about that. Hopefully you found the 15-second fast-forward button there. And
It exists
for a reason. Mm. Okay, Anonymous writes in, hashtag ICGC. I have a friend who goes to Emmanuel College in Adelaide and he bought an $800 bat using half of his dad's money. I give him shit about his parents paying for him to go to school and an expensive cricket bat. So the question is, who is the alpha and who is the beta in the story?
Well, I think our friend, and hello, and thank you for writing in.
Cheers.
He's probably not yet an adult, I suppose. So it was just a straight. I mean, what he's saying is like, my mate gets supported by his parents financially, and can we pay that out?
Mm.
I'd pay it out if he was like 25. The underage kid, the kids at school. Like, it's not his fault that his parents probably have a bit of money. You know what I mean?
Nah.
If he's leaning on it at 25, 26, come back to us.
Mm.
Yeah, that's problematic. And I have seen that. One of the strangest things you ever see at grade cricket, because grade cricketers, they all grown up playing maybe Saturday, Sunday as kids or whatever. They're probably reasonably talented growing up, and they've decided to, for some reason, play in their adulthood.
Mm.
And when you're a kid and you play, say you play like rep cricket on a Sunday or whatever, it was lunchtime, a long day, and you'd all probably retire to your parents who'd be sitting on a picnic blanket or at some sort of fold-out camping chair and they'd have lunch for you and feed you lunch because you're a child, you're a minor, and your parents are responsible for your lunch.
Yeah.
I've seen people, and I played when I was like 23, 24, this is a notorious set of brothers, the guys like got a kid and they would, with the same ritual, walk over to their parents who would provide them lunch, not the team lunch, provide them lunch, and they'd sit there at lunchtime and sit there and eat their lunch that was provided by their
scandalous.
Their probable pensioner parents. But that was their ritual. So, you know, there's a forgiving part of me that's like, you know, that's a nice ritual for them and good for them. And then there's the other part of me like, mate, you're a fucking adult. Bring your own lunch.
Mm.
Anyway, so I'm just saying to Anonymous, like if his parents are looking after him 25, but you know.
Okay, there's no alpha and beta in the story.
Yeah.
It's just like you've got a friend and he goes to Emmanuel College and, you know, he's got some money. The way to go about it with people who, you know, are of money is to criticise the brand of $800 bat because, like, you know, people of wealth are often materialistic.
Oh.
And so you know, if let's say it was a kookaburra, she's like, oh, why'd you get that one? Why didn't you get the Grey Nix? Like, that's a way better stick.
Do you mumble it like that as well?
Didn't even get a good stick.
Yeah.
Well, it's a soliloquy. Mm. So.
Oh, I see. Do you know what that is?
Oh, I see. Oh, I see.
Okay. Anurag Mishra writes in.
Oh, yeah.
And says, do you think Rohit Sharma opening batting in tests will work outside of Asia?
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I am your only listener in India, which proves you have indeed cracked the Indian market.
We seem to get the message, I am your only Indian listener weekly at the moment, it seems. Yeah, I think Anurag Mishra there, I appreciate his question. Not quite the right tone of Ask TJC, because he's asked for a serious cricket question.
Rohit, yeah, you've included it, and I'll throw it under the bus.
I've included it, yeah. Because I like the idea of us cracking the Indian market, basically.
Right, yeah.
It's a business play.
Well, this is what happens in India, though, right? Like,
what happens in India?
Well, they are
spins?
Demolishing. Yeah, let's just lean on stereotypes.
If it seems it spins,
they are. they're obviously scoring thousands of runs against South Africa and breaking numerous records. I saw they broke the record for like the most sixes hit in a Test series the other day.
Really,
47 sixes. Wow, or something.
Yeah.
But Rohit Sharma, like, now he's seeing stats pop up, just saying like, oh, he actually averages more at home than Bradman did. He's 99. Bradman was 98 or whatever. And
yeah.
You're like, the reflex in you wants to get, what does he average away from home, champ? which is my problem.
That's I thought. That, I thought the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, what do you say? Like, Rohit Sharma, good player. Will it work outside of Asia? It probably won't work as well as it does at home.
Yeah.
But what's new? You know, in cricket, everyone's better at home. Look at David Warner.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Yeah. I'm just thinking of like, when will India have to branch out when it's too hot to play cricket in India because of global warming? And like, Bangladesh is underwater, for instance. 160 million people live there. Where are they going to relocate to? It's a mass migration issue.
Naomi Klein's written a really good book called On Fire and the impact of the Green New Deal and why it should be embraced. I just encourage people to.
So Rohit, if he wants a future in Test cricket, is what I'm saying, is he's going to have to learn to play the Gabba.
Mm.
Get off the front dog, mate.
Stephen James writes in. I'll just take this because it's timed better that way. Lads, I've gone to a new club to try and reinvent myself as a batter. However, due to general lack of talent in prior seasons, my cricket stats are pretty average.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thrown into the fives where I don't bowl and bat eight. I got a stick last week and hit a rough 30-odd, 17 off 19, to be the third highest scorer in a losing side. Ticking all the boxes. However, it didn't change anything this week and I was stuck down the order as we cruised to an easy win. My question is this. To go up the grades or even up the order, should I commit my entire being to the gym, get a superb trim for my salad and put my name down in the first grade net for a stick at training? Appreciate the feedback, fellas, as I feel my career is at a crossroads and I don't know what to do. That's Stephen James.
My mates who still play cricket had one of the grimmest Saturdays I've ever heard in my entire life last week. They got bowled out for like 150 or something in the first week. Day two, they come back. The team chasing like already won for 40. They took two wickets and the team got them three down. The game was over at tee. And I was like, what are you doing? Why are you still playing? He was so...
Can I ask, did they bat on?
They didn't bat on. They called it a tee.
Well, that's helpful.
They called it a tee.
Because that's when it gets really problematic. Because one of the upsides of finishing at tee, as being part of the losing side, which is part of many, is like when they're three for 110, you're like, this is nearly over, you beauty. Like, we're getting off at 3:30.
Yeah.
And then when they decide to bat on, you're like... Oh, well, in certain sides I was in first grade, they sat down on the ground, started bowling with their opposite hand.
Yeah, yeah.
We won the spirit of cricket that year.
But isn't that a bit of a misnomer of just like, oh, we get to knock off early? First of all, like, the best part about cricket is when you don't play. Oh, it's a washout. I don't play this week.
Don't have to deal with the anxiety of my performances.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's your favourite part about cricket. But like, what you've already committed the entire Saturday to the game. So if you finish at 3:30, it makes no difference because you're going to stick around and have a couple of beers after the game anyway.
Mm.
And then even if you're playing an away game, you're probably an hour away from home. So you're not going to get home until 5:30 anyway. It's actually not any earlier.
Yeah.
You might as well actually just stay.
And you'll have pressure from
prism.
People to go back to the club where other grades haven't finished at 5:30.
Yeah.
So let's wait around because, you know, fours had a good win.
Fives are down the road. They're 2 weeks away from Richie. Are they?
Yeah. Let's go have a look. Let's go support them on, boys.
Yeah.
No, I'd rather go out with my mates.
Check notifications. Yeah. No notifications. Yeah, let's go. Should we go? Should we carpool? So Stephen's question. Well, I don't really know why he's playing because he's not going to get any better. I can't remember if I've told this story before, Pez, but I've said to you recently a couple of times that, like, It was like my second last year and I got bowled by someone. And then the guy managing the team was just like, mate, your eyes are gone.
So good.
Fucking 29.
So good.
29. My eyes have gone.
Yeah, they're gone, mate.
Where have they gone? Mm. I missed a full toss. You know, it happens.
Yeah. Because I was in Sydney on Saturday for Dave's wedding, I've got no problem saying this. I'm trying to reconcile my relationship with the game at the moment. And I stopped by North second grade to catch up with my old skipper.
He just happened to be there.
And he was, they were batting.
You went to watch and he just happened to be there.
Well, it was one of those things where actually, like,
you're the great cricketer.
Stop it. it actually brought back memories because I woke up in the morning and I was like, oh, I hope they're batting. And then I checked on my cricket. Oh, they're batting. If they won the toss on them, going on Twitter
live
before we get the, before I got the plane. Cause I'm like, well, if they're bowling, then I'm not going to be able to see them because they're on the field.
Yeah.
It just reminded me of all those times where you were trying to line someone up to come and watch you play cricket and then you go into bat and then you're like, oh, they're here yet. And then the worst is that you'd get out, then they turn up. Like, you'd be mates who don't really know cricket. Like, you're already out, mate. Like, yeah. Like, oh, okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, so when saw him, and as I was watching it, I was like, oh, I could do this. And then look closer. You're like, no, I couldn't.
Yeah.
I absolutely couldn't do this.
Your eyes are gone.
Your eyes are gone.
Where did they go? Not sure we answered Steve's question there. Just spoke about ourselves for 10 minutes. Next one, Ethan Gladman.
Yeah, last one.
Last one. And we appreciate all the ones that have come in, but do send them in as ever because, it's good. Ethan says, hey, lads, need a few bits of advice, but first here's a little insight into the backstory of my battle with identity crisis and my searching and longing for acceptance and success. Mm-hmm. When I was 14, I played cricket in England. Although telling people I got selected, I just paid a lot of money so they took me. I had some success. I batted 4 and scored 101 not out against an under-15's third 11, albeit in a warm-up match, so it didn't actually count towards anything. It was the peak of my career, and I have been living off the back of that success since then, having no Australian success to show, with my top score being 53 in third grade. After my ton, I decided I'd travel the world playing cricket for Australia, and I was sure of this. I loved this beautiful game and was planning to move to England to explore my options of English heritage and open up the options of playing for England or Australia. Now, though I am 18 years old and through years of failure, I now hate the game. I still play because I am seen as a player of promise because of my ability in the nets, but I still am yet to show anything on the field. Because of my net ability, I played second grade all last year. I was indeed batting 8 and not bowling, but I must be a good bloke to stay on the side because I wasn't scoring runs and it definitely wasn't my rig or salad. Anyway, I have nothing to show for that season with a top score of 12. Fuck me. I've been trying desperately to fill the void of that 100 all those years ago, even if it was scoring an Australian second grade 40-odd and hearing the words, well batted, mate, from the first grade captain back at the club that night who otherwise wouldn't know my name. But here's my chance to fix everything. I've dislocated my knee 3 times in the last 2 years, including earlier this year, and I should be right to go back to cricket. Approaching the upcoming season, I'm telling the boys I'm 50-50 about playing and my knee is still a bit tender, just to hear a few words of sympathy and get the feeling of someone caring for me again since Dad stopped coming to my games. So I guess my question is, do I quit now and tell my future wife and kids I would have went pro if my knee injuries didn't stop me? With my 100 in England and under-16s rep gear is proof of this because they wouldn't know any better? Or do I go around again and hope that this year is actually my year, even though I've been saying that every year since my trip to England would be my year? I'm 18 years old and should be enjoying my Saturdays with my mates, but there's something about cricket that has this grip on me. To be completely honest, I found more satisfaction and purpose writing this message than I have got playing this shitty game for the last few years. So I'm looking for a way out, using my knees as an excuse, but I know if I don't play, I'll be even more lost than I would be if I was standing at fine leg every Saturday wondering what the hell I was doing with my life. So my next question is, if I don't play, what will I do with my Saturdays? Cheers, boys. Let me know what you think. Hashtag ICGC. Well, he really hit all the bingo words there, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, that one more than many, had a real Dear Diary feel. Like, I was thinking, oh, he's actually just exacting therapy on himself through this writing.
Through and then a Facebook comment.
He recognises that in the final paragraph. It's the age-old question, really, isn't it? Like, what void am I filling? Why am I trying to satisfy some kind of, high that I had as a child where I thought I was quite good at cricket and now I'm realising rationally that I'm not? Why do I still do this?
Mm-hmm.
I'd be remiss of me to, you have to come up with an answer yourself, you know?
I've got an answer.
And let me say it, okay. As a 34-year-old, I'm now semi-entertaining. Like, I'm not saying I'm going back to playing cricket.
Seems like you are.
Yeah, well, I'm not. That's why I use those English words. Have that meaning. It's more broadly reconciling my relationship with the game. You know, like trying to like not necessarily say that, like, you know, it's uncool to like cricket.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm going to try and love cricket again.
Pez, when you were 18, did you have the existential thought of, like, should I keep playing?
No, I thought I was going to go all the way.
Yeah. So, like, so he's come to a realization early. And, like, the question of, like, what am I going to do with my Saturdays? 18. 18. What do you do with every Saturday for the rest of your life? It's going to be amazing. You've got your best years ahead of you. But, like, that's the answer. Like, he already knows that he's not going to make it. He's written it. He has an inner belief in himself that he knows. He has an inner belief that he knows he's not going to make it. It's an oxymoron.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't this a question though? Like, what? Like, why do you play? Why? Why?
Yeah.
What's it about?
Yeah. That's what this account is. Why? Yeah.
Why?
That if you summed up in one word, it'd be why.
Yeah.
Which should be a t-shirt, just a big question mark.
Yeah. Why do I do this?
Why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, it may be just I'm just going to, like, even if it is, well, I have identity issues and I'm trying to attain a high that I never had before. It's basically a drug addiction.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're just trying to do more and more and more to get that first one. As long as you're aware of that, then you just do it. And you grieve and you go through the pain of it, and that's life. It's just a great roller coaster. It's a nihilistic kind of thing. You're like, you know, not everything has to be a high all the time.
Yeah.
There's, you know, like life on the other side of cricket. Yeah, is it all it's made out to be, you know? Beach, rig out, friends with women and men, you know, nice drinks, career prospects, relationships, books, other interests. Is that necessarily, you know?
Is that better?
Is that better?
Is that better?
Only you can answer that.
I'll answer that one as well.
Me too.
Yes. Well, what a great place to finish at the very start of this summer. There's only about 20 more of these to go, plus all our other projects. So, greatcricket.club if you're interested in getting tickets or whatever. You know, that's where to find us. All right, we'll see you next week on the Great Cricketer Podcast.